to kill all of Mordecai's people. Not because they're Mordecai's people, but because when they had shown who his people were, Haman sought to destroy them all. He sought to destroy all of the Jews or the Judeans throughout the kingdom. So there is now an anger that exists. It was known to Mordecai before any of this ever happened. He would probably have bowed to the other wise men if they weren't Agagites, but he wouldn't bow to Haman. And there's a reason for it we'll get into. 7 says, in the first month, that is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Asuerus, they cast Pur. That is the lot before Haman from day to day, from month to month, to the 12th month. That is the month Adar. That would be the month we're in now. This is saying starting at the first month, Nisan, which is what the Bible would have referred to as Abib before this captivity. At that point, they started naming the names after the Babylonian naming. Haman said to King Asuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom. Their laws are diverse from all people, neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore, it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those to have the charges of the business, to bring it into the king's treasuries. Just a side note, Haman was getting involved with banking, treasuries, raising money, so that he could make sure to get rid of the people. Just a thought. And then he says, the king took his ring from his hand, which was a symbol of the king's very own power, his seal. This says the king does it. He sealed it with his fist on the wax. The king has said it. And he took his ring from his hand, he gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the Jew's enemy, or the Judean's enemy. The king said to Haman, the silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with them as it seems good to thee. Then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the first month. 13th day of the first month. That would have been the day before the lamb is slaughtered, if the people would have been able to do that. That's the day when Christ gathered his disciples together at the Last Supper and had a meal on the 13th day, which went into the 14th day, but he did not die yet, so it wasn't the 14th. So just an interesting connection why they made that mention, that this was on the 13th day of the first month. This would have been right before the Passover would have been starting. So this whole thing starts on the first month, and it progresses, we're told, all the way to the 12th, which is why we celebrate it now, which we'll get to at the end. Deuteronomy chapter 25, before we go straight to there, quickly overview what an Agagite is. You should be able, if you can get on the internet and look up that study, it will spell a lot of this out right on paper on GoshenHomesteads.com, but if you can't do that, give a quick overview without taking too much time on it, which we have studied in the past a bunch of times, and it would be very important to get the whole meaning of the Book of Esther by reading it out of the Septuagint translation along with the King James, because the Septuagint actually has Apocrypha version has quite a few more chapters and verses in it that others don't. Seems like just the meat of it came to us through the King James or the Hebrew translation at the time it was written. 1 Samuel 15 says, Samuel also said to Saul, Yahweh sent me to anoint thee king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, hearken thou unto the voice of the words of Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, I remembered that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way which he came up from Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have. Spare them not, but slay them, man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. And Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. Saul came to a city of Amalek and laid wait in the valley. And Saul said unto the Kenites, go and depart. So he goes and he tells the Kenites, who were not Amalekites, to get out of here. You guys, you know, you guys aren't part of this. And the Kenites, as we know, were people who dwelled in tents. And we're going to move down through that real quick to 8, where it says, he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and the oxen and the fatlings and the lambs. Eventually, Samuel does kill Agag. He slays him at the end of the chapter. But Saul's whole reason for being dethroned as king by God was that he did not listen. He did not do what Yahweh told him. He didn't kill all the people as he was commanded to kill. Which I know sounds in our modern day to be barbarous and gruesome, and I'm not doubting that it is, and I'm not saying it's not, but it is God's word. It's what he said to do, and it was what needed to be done. And he didn't do it. It wasn't because he kept the animals alive for a sacrifice. It wasn't just the reason. What really made Yahweh mad was that he did not do what he had said to do, all the way back at the law. Now, interestingly enough, King Saul was also a descendant of a man named Kish. He was Saul, the son of Kish. Saul would have been the brother to one of Mordecai and Esther's common ancestors. They would both be from the same stock of Benjamites. Identical. Stock of Benjamites, running all the way up through history. And now here we have an Agagite, and I can't say how he made it. Maybe he was in another land when this attack took place. Maybe because this first assault, this is only one city, remember, of the Amalekites. The first assault on the Amalekite people, this was the first war, the first battle out of a war that was to be waged against Amalek, failed. He took this king, he went straight for the king. Smite the shepherd and the sheep will scatter, kind of idea. Go and get the king and we'll probably be able to take the rest of the Amalekites alive. There was also an Amalekite, if you remember, in the time of David, at the end of Saul's life, where it says that there was an Amalekite who came unto the king and said he killed Saul. And what did King David do to him, who was not King David yet? He just inherited the kingdom. Marie, do you remember?
He killed him.
He killed him. He cut his head off. He had one of his young men fall upon him. So we know that the Amalekites, even though it says here that in this city, he did what he was supposed to with all the people, other than the Agagite king, there were some more Amalekites. It says he was the servant of an Egyptian, for instance. So maybe there was a league between the two, and that's how Haman's progeny existed. We're not sure. But one thing we are sure is that because King Saul failed, Yahweh did not choose him to bring about the destruction of Amalek in the way he said. But Esther and Mordecai are King Saul's kinsmen. Kinsmen redeemer, maybe, even, in a sense. So going back then to Deuteronomy 25, which is where I originally said that we should go, we might be able to understand a little bit better what this whole thing's about. It is interesting, just to note, considering what we said about Haman and what he was involved in, what he did, how he was involved with the silver and raising the money to kill people. And I said, remember that and think about it a little bit. How if you just go a few verses above this thing about the Amalekites, we would see, "Thou shalt not have a bag of diverse weights, great and small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, great and small. You shall have perfect and just weights, a perfect and a just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which Yahweh thy God giveth thee. For all that do such things, all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto Yahweh thy God." I don't know why those things are in the order that they're in, but I find it interesting considering one is talking about dealing with money and people who deal with money in an untruthful fashion by not having a just weight and a just measure, is specifically mentioned right above this, 17. "Remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way, when ye were come forth out of Egypt, how he met thee by the way, and he smote the hindermost part of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary, and he feared not God. Therefore it shall be, when Yahweh thy God has given thee rest from all of thine enemies round about, in the land which Yahweh thy God giveth thee for an inheritance, to possess it, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven, thou shalt not forget it." So this is something not to be forgotten. It's spoken of a different way in Exodus chapter 17. Going back to the first time it's mentioned, right after the battle of Amalek. I think it was in Masada, if I'm not incorrect. Let's find out. Again, that's unfair because I've been reading this a lot lately. Make it seem like I'm really smart. Massa. This is where Moses has water flow from the rock. And right afterwards, Amalek, in verse 8, says, "Then came Amalek and fought with Israel at Rephidim. Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand." In mine hand. Of course, we know the story of Moses standing with his arms outstretched. Some people say it was the symbol of the cross that he was showing us, how Christ was going to raise up his hands. But most people won't go far enough to see what connection that would have to do with what we're talking about. Maybe that was true. Maybe that was a symbol of Christ. And if it was a symbol of Christ and it was over this situation, then there could be a further reaching repercussion to that symbology if that was the symbology mentioned, or the symbology meaning to be mentioned to us. It says here that Joshua discomforted Amalek, in verse 13, and his people with the edge of the sword, and Yahweh said to Moses, "Write for this for a memorial in a book. Rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven." And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Yahweh Nisi. For he said, "Because Yahweh has sworn that Yahweh will have war with Amalek from generation to generation." So they built this altar, Jehovah Nisi, or Yahweh Nisi. The Lord is my banner is what it means. It's like a flag. Yahweh is my banner. He's our symbol. That's some of the reason I think why people have said that the symbol of our God, of Yahweh, is the cross now to the Christian, and that Moses with the outstretched arms was the symbol of Christ. Well, if that's the case, then the reason why the cross had become the symbol for Yahweh Nisi through the lawgiver stretching his hands out upon a mountain would have to have something to do with Amalek also, wouldn't it? If we were to go back into the book of Genesis, where Amalek is first mentioned, we would read that Amalek was born to a man named Eliphaz. That can be found in 36:12 of Genesis. He was born to a woman named Ada, which was Esau's wife, Eliphaz was. Ada, it tells us in 2:36:2, Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan. And that's why I mentioned, that's why we went into this genealogy talk when we first started talking about Esther. Probably seems strange that we jumped back so far to find out who all these people were and then got hung up on the Canaanites. Esau took his wives from the daughters of Canaan, Ada, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon the Hivite. So Ada is a daughter of Elon the Hittite. She is a Hittite. Those were the exact people, that Rebekah did not want her children to marry. But he did anyhow. And he married those Canaanite women, and he fathered a child with one of them, his firstborn son, which would have been his heir, who would have inherited his curse that was given to him by his father, which we'll read next. That would have been given to his firstborn son, who apparently was a boy named Amalek, who eventually had a tribe of people called Amalekites, who eventually had a firstborn son named Agag, who was a king, who eventually spawned a man named Haman, who eventually wanted to kill Israel, who by God's law says there would be a war with forever. So God sure did keep track of all this stuff, and Mordecai, when he would not bow to Haman, knew it. When he heard that name, Agag, I am sure Mordecai said, I am not bowing to him, because I know Yahweh's law, and he's not going to like me. There is a reason we are not going to get along. And that's exactly how it happened, isn't it? Let's see. Going back then, just simply to see the situation that happened when the birthright was taken, we're going to go to Genesis chapter 27. Now, here is where the deception did take place for sure. Verse 22 says, Jacob went near to Isaac his father, and he felt him, and he said, the voice of Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau, because Jacob put hair on his hands to make him seem more hairy, because Esau was a hairy man. He discerned him not because his hands were hairy, and his brother Esau's hands, so he blessed him. He said, thou art my very son Esau, with a question, and he said, I am. And he said, bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's venison. So he brings him some deer meat to eat. 26 says, his father Isaac said to him, come near and kiss me. He came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his raiment, and he blessed him, and he said, see, the smell of my son is the smell of the field which Yahweh has blessed. Therefore God give thee of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee, and nations, or peoples, that's not the word goyim as normally the word nations would say, bow down to thee. Be lord over thy brethren. Let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. No, there's only one other son. Cursed be everyone that curses thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. And it came to pass that as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, Esau his brother came in from his hunting to show himself unto his father. So the blessing that was given to him by his father was all of these things, all of these blessed things, that he would have much to eat, that he would have the dew of heaven upon him, that other nations would serve him or other peoples would serve him, that his relatives would even serve him, that anybody, and this is the blessing that had been passed down from generation to generation that God gave to Abraham, that everyone who blesses him will be blessed and everyone that curses him will be cursed. And that was passed on to Jacob, rather. So whenever Esau is found out to truly be Esau, and that Jacob had taken the birthright the way he did, or taken that blessing, those words. It says in 34, verse 34, 27, when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry, and said to his father, bless me, even me also, my father. And he said, thy brother came with subtlety, and has taken away thy blessing. Now Jacob could have said, ha, he tricked me. The boy tricked me. That blessing doesn't stand. He's not getting that blessing. You can have it. You know, a trickster doesn't get the blessing, right? But he says, he can't. I already gave your blessing away. He said, is not he rightly named Jacob? So then Isaac speaks and says he's rightly named who he is. We knew that this was what he was going to do all along. That was what the prophecy said. That was what Yahweh said to Rebekah. For he has supplanted me those two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he's taken away my blessing. And he said, hast thou not reserved the blessing for me? Isaac answered and said unto Esau, behold, I have made him thy lord, and all of his brethren have I given to him for servants. And with corn and wine have I sustained him. And what shall I do now unto thee, my son? And Esau said to his father, hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac, his father, answered and said unto him, behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and the dew of heaven from above. By thy sword shalt thou live, and shall serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand, then I will slay my brother Jacob. So he did get a blessing of sorts, but the blessing was not quite as nice as what Jacob got. Instead, he seen the hatred that was going to persist between them, and this would seemingly be the hatred and the birthright that was passed on from Esau, which didn't start with Esau. It started with Canaan. And the way Esau gained the birthright was not because he genetically was any different than Jacob. Rather, he was a twin brother. They looked probably very much alike. While one might have been hairy and red all over with red hair, possibly, that's the interpretation of it. He was identical to him. They had no difference in their genetics. They came from the same father and mother, same womb even. But Yahweh, when he spoke to Rebekah, he said, two nations are in your womb, and two manners of people will be parted from your bowels, and the elder shall serve the younger. And that's how it all started. And that curse that was given to Canaan was not attached to Esau. It wasn't his yet. It wasn't the curse to serve his brethren that needed to be his. He could have existed just like his descendants, who, according to the Septuagint, the very last chapter of the Septuagint, Esau's children who came out of his marriage to the Ishmaelite created Job, who was the only Edomite that we're aware of, and not everybody would even agree with that, but according to the Septuagint translation, Job was a descendant of Esau having children with an Ishmaelite wife. And he had a blessing, and he had great faith, and he was a man to be loved and esteemed, and for us to even read about. Well, has one of the biggest books in the Bible, one of the best lessons to be taught to us about suffering, primarily, and how a man has to trust in the will of God, regardless of the bad things happening in his life. But he didn't inherit the curse that was given to Esau on account of him marrying into the forbidden lineage of Canaanites that was achieved when he married Hittite and Canaanite women. And that's where the division of it happened. The division of the two Edomite people, which would probably be why when in the book of Deuteronomy gives a law on who could enter the congregation of Israel. In 23, there's a list of people that are mentioned. People of mixed lineage are among the second. People who can't have any progeny are the first listed. One that's wounded in his privy members or his stones, is how the Bible puts it. That's a man who makes it so that he can't have children at all. A bastard is one of, according to the Hebrew, a mamzer, which means someone who's mixed with a strange people. According to the Hebrew, you have to read that. It's not simply a child born to a harlot or something to that effect. Ammonites and Moabites can't enter into the congregation, which, interestingly enough, well, that the reason is not being mentioned. The reason is not mentioned that they are of an incestual relation also. It's because of how they acted. Canaan is not listed here in this specific mention, probably because he would be grouped in with the bastard category. And then it goes on to say in 7, you shall not abhor an Edomite, for he is your brother. You shall not abhor an Egyptian, because you were a stranger in his land. Well, an Edomite is a son of Esau. And if that is the correct translation of that word Edomite, and that's what it's talking about, the question is, how can you abhor an Amalekite, like Mordecai did, but not abhor an Edomite? Because an Amalekite is just another type of Edomite. The answer probably lies in the story of Esau going to take women of permissible stock so that his parents would be happy with him.